This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Today's bill is indeed about jobs. It's about growing the economy. It's about trusting the American people to save, to invest, to spend their hard-earned dollars.
Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist speaking from Capitol Hill on Friday. Before breaking for the Memorial Day weekend, the U.S. Congress passed a $350 billion 10-year tax cut package, and President Bush is expected to sign the bill into law. Dan Shore and his wife Lee are receiving honorary degrees at Whittier College in California today. Yes, that is Richard Nixon's alma mater. Boy, the world does move on sometimes. So we're pleased to be joined by John Parker, who is the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief of The Economist. Glad to have you with us, John.
Very nice to be here, and many congratulations, Dan.
Tax cuts, second major tax cut in the Bush presidency. Where exactly do you think those cuts are going to be felt?
Well, for higher income earners, it's quite good the bill accelerates income tax cuts that were going to be made anyway. It'll be felt in the states. The states are really hurting. The budget deficits there have been kind of out of control. Mm-hmm. And they give $20 billion to the states, which more or less closes the budget deficits that they have for this fiscal year. They've got huge deficits for next year, but at least it's good for this year. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing is that it switches taxation away from kind of investment income because it halves the tax on dividend. That's sort of a tax reform rather than a tax cut. I mean, as you can hear, mm-hmm. I'm British. In Britain, we don't double tax dividends. So, yeah. And it seems to any foreigner is quite a normal thing. The real question, though, is, you know, this tax reform, quite sensible, is dressed up as a tax cut. And the size of that tax cut is really a big issue. We don't really know how big it is.
Let me ask you, because the size of the plan is, it's less than half the size of what the original proposal was from the Bush administration. Are they in any way dispirited? Why is this being seen as a victory? It was a very close vote.
They shouldn't really be dispirited because all but one of the parts of this bill, so-called sunset, that is run out sometime between 2004 and 2008. And that's the way in which they've got this bill to come in at $350 billion. Those provisions, they, as it were, pretend that they're not going to happen after they've sunsetted, if you mm-hmm. see what I mean. If you say that these things are going to be permanent, and pretty much everybody, as far as I can tell, wants them to be permanent, that is on the Republican side, yeah. Then the total cost of this bill is more like $800 billion or a trillion, which is actually slightly more than the president proposed when he first wanted this cut.
And we note on this Memorial Day weekend, the United States is once again under Code Orange or high risk. Reports of increased chatter among groups and individuals. U.S., British, and German embassies have been closed in Saudi Arabia. How do you read what we're told of the chatter and perceived increased threats?
Yes, it looks like global terrorism is increasing all over the world. My take on this is that it comes really in two parts here. One is revival of Mideastern terror. There's some hope in the peace plan, and inevitably Hamas is striking back. Perhaps we can talk about that in a minute. The other part of this is that we're seeing a revival of Al-Qaeda, but in a very curious way. Al-Qaeda's like two organizations. It's a real top, the sort of centrally organized part, and they've been in deep trouble after losing their base in Afghanistan. And this week we've seen an attempt by the sort of central leadership to come back with a tape issued from the number two in the organization, al-Zawahiri. Mm-hmm. The other part of it is like a virtual organization. These are sort of semi-independent guerrilla terrorist groups operating fairly independently but sort of enthused by al-Qaeda and wanting to mimic them. And they're attacking sort of soft targets now. Mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda itself, the main part, seems to go after sort of the World Trade Center, the coal, very difficult targets. But this week we've seen sort of civilian targets, tourist targets, and in new countries like Morocco and Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm. Targets which perhaps have been more exposed and where they haven't been able to take the care and concern that major targets have had over the past 18 months. You mentioned that there might be at hand a meeting between President Bush and Ariel Sharon and Mahmoud Abbas.
Right. This week, for the first time for a very long time, we've seen some hope in the peace process in the Middle East. yesterday, Ariel Sharon himself accepted the so-called roadmap for peace. Mm-hmm. He accepted it with reservations, but he has accepted it. The Palestinians have already accepted it. And what we're seeing at the moment is sort of behind-the-scenes diplomacy, if you like, on both sides as they try to prepare their countries for the concessions necessary in that roadmap. So we saw... We will see a debate mm-hmm. tomorrow by Likud as to whether to by the cabinet as to whether to accept it. And we have seen Mahmoud Abbas talking to the Hamas leadership this week in the hope of getting them to ease off and to accept the concessions that will be necessary.
I want to turn now to Iraq, because this week the United Nations approved a resolution that would end nearly 13 years of sanctions against Iraq, and specifically will enable oil exports to resume. How do you think this decision and the end of the embargo is going to affect not only economics in Iraq, but the effect of the reconstruction policies?
Well, Scott, you've just come back. You know more about this than me, but it won't do a lot for the most important problem on the ground, which is the lack of security. But it does do a couple of important things. It gives a UN mandate to the US Anglo administration. Mm-hmm. And that means in turn that the international donors like the World Bank and the IMF have like a legal entity that they can lend to, that they can deal mm-hmm. with, and that should help the reconstruction. It also means that Iraqi oil can now be sold freely in the way that it hasn't been able to do for the past 10 years of sanctions. So I think that both those two things are quite important.
John, I want to draw you out on something finally. President Bush heads off to Evian, France next week for a Group of Eight world powers meeting. A number of topics obviously are expected to be discussed, including perhaps oil revenues coming from Iraq. But the state of the U.S. dollar is in a state at the moment.
It is indeed. The dollar's fallen something like 40% from its peak, which is really a lot. It's been gentle so far. What happened this week was interesting for two reasons. One is that it fell back to the point that against the euro that it was at when the euro was launched. So, as it were, sort of back to stage one. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, what we saw was the Treasury Secretary, John Snow, apparently abandoning the previous rhetoric, at least on the mm-hmm. dollar from the administration, which was we support a strong dollar. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like the administration was sort of leaning with the fall in the dollar.
He said it could actually help U.S. exports.
He said it could help U.S. exports, and he defined a strong dollar really without any reference to its international value. I was very intrigued by this because it seemed to me to link some of the things that we've been talking about together. The dollar's been declining anyway. The peace plan already exists. The economy has been in trouble for a little while, and Iraq was always going to be a problem. But in all the areas that we've been talking about, the dollar, the peace mm-hmm. plan, and so on, what we've seen is the Bush administration sort of taking charge, but also taking responsibility and accountability for it.
Thanks very much, John Parker of The Economist.